be seated. Our text tonight will come from the Old Testament, from the book of Psalms, from Psalm 50. Psalm 50, this is on page 600 in your pew Bibles. This morning, at least for a portion of the time in our Sunday school class with a couple of the young men, we considered the question, what is the chief end of man? Why are you here on this earth? This psalm beautifully replies to that question. What is your chief end? Why are you here? Are you not here to glorify, to declare, to reflect, to enjoy your God? Psalm 50, this is a psalm of Asaph. We'll begin at verse 1 and read through to the end of the psalm. The Mighty One, God the Lord, speaks and summons the earth from the rising of the sun to its setting. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God shines forth. Our God comes, he does not keep silence. Before him is a devouring fire, and around him a mighty tempest. He calls to the heavens above and to the earth that he may judge his people. Gather to me my faithful ones who made a covenant with me by sacrifice. The heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. Not for your sacrifices do I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. I will not accept a bull from your house or goats from your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine. Cattle on a thousand hills. I know all the birds of the hills, and all that moves in the field is mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world and its fullness are mine. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and perform your vows to the Most High and call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you and you shall glorify me. But to the wicked, God says, what right have you to recite my statutes or take my covenant on your lips? For you hate discipline, and you cast my words behind you. If you see a thief, you are pleased with him, and you keep company with adulterers. You give your mouth free rein for evil, and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. "These things you have done, and I have been silent. You thought that I was one like yourself. But now, I rebuke you and lay the charge before you. Mark this then, you who forget God, lest I tear you apart and there be none to deliver. The one who offers thanksgiving as his sacrifice glorifies me. To one who orders his way rightly, I will show the salvation of God." So, for those of you familiar with the Shorter Catechism, and the first question, what is the chief end of man? Could you spot in the psalm where you would go to hear that answer? That man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Where do you see that word glorify? Do you not see it in verse 15 where he says, "Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you and you shall glorify me." Do you not see it in verse 23? "The one who offers thanksgiving as his sacrifice glorifies me." Okay, so what does it mean to glorify him? What does it mean in verse 15? "I will deliver you and you shall glorify me." What does he mean in verse 23? "The one who offers thanksgiving as his sacrifice glorifies me." What does it mean to glorify him? Well, is it not to declare who he is? You know, to speak, to verbalize, to proclaim, to whisper, to pass along, to speak who he is. And then to reflect who he is. To reflect his attributes. To speak of him and then to reflect in the way you live. To speak of him with your words and then to reflect him with your life, with your manner of living, with your words, your language, your deeds, your manner of life. "To the one who orders his way rightly." Look at verse 23. "I will show the salvation of God." So I want us to take those phrases from verse 15 and verse 23. I want us to think carefully about what does it mean to glorify him when he says, "You shall glorify me," in verse 15. I want us to think carefully, taking this psalm as a whole. What does that mean? So those who would glorify him are a people who hear. What is it to glorify him? It is, first of all, to hear. It is to hear him. Look at verses 1 through 7. So you look at verse 1, "The mighty one, God the Lord." What does he do? Kids, can you see what he does in verse 1? What does the mighty one, what does God the Lord do? He speaks. What is it to live for his glory? What is it to seek nothing more and nothing less than his glory? Well, it is to hear when he speaks. It is to listen when he summons. It's to bend your ear when he promises, when he calls. The mighty one, God the Lord, what does he do? He speaks and he summons the earth. Now, what is a summons? Well, it's a command to come. You are summoned to appear. And who is summoned to appear? Who is called? Look at verse 1. He speaks and summons not just Israel. He speaks and he summons the earth. The command of the Bible Y'all, the general call of the gospel, it goes forth to all the nations. It is without borders. This is truly a message that is without borders. It goes out, and it goes out conquering and to conquer. It starts here, and it goes down the street, and it goes across town, and it grows to the next county. And it goes across the state and to the ends of the earth. He speaks and he summons the earth. And then he gives you an image. Don't you love how the Bible speaks with imagery? What's the imagery that's used? Look at verse 1. From the rising of the sun to its setting. It used to be said that the sun never set on the British Empire. The sun never sets upon the empire of Christ. From the rising of the sun to its setting. One of these days we're going to take verse 2 and spend the whole time just talking about verse 2 and how Zion is the perfection of beauty. How a well-ordered, gospel-loving, Christ-embracing church is the perfection of beauty. You will not find a more beautiful sight on this earth. But that's for another time. He speaks. To glorify him means that you hear when he calls. Imagery from Mount Sinai, from Exodus chapters 19 and 20. Imagery from Sinai is used in verses 3, 4, 5. Our God comes, he does not keep silence. There's a devouring fire, a mighty tempest. What happened at Mount Sinai? Well, there was clouds, thick darkness, fire, thunder, lightning. And he did not keep silent. It is to hear. He calls to the heavens above, verse 4, and to the earth, that he may judge his people. There is coming the day when he will gather the peoples together, and Christ himself will be seated upon the throne, and Christ himself will judge. That's the imagery. The heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. So to glorify him means that you listen not only when he's saying what you want to hear. It means that you listen when he is speaking what you would rather not hear. You listen when he is speaking against you. Make no mistake about it. There are times when the Lord will speak against you. Look at verse 7. Hear, O my people. He's speaking to his people, those whom he loves, those who are in covenant with him. There is a time for him to speak against them. O Israel, I will testify against you. And then he goes on to indict them for a failure of heart in public worship. What is it to glorify him? Oh, it is to hear. To glorify and to enjoy him means that you have a distinct hearing. Each of you, you're all aware of the multitude of voices that demand to be heard. All the voices out there that clamor for your ear. And they insist on you bending to what they say. Every single one of you, from the oldest to the youngest. Kids, when you're watching TV, what do you see in between the, you know, you're watching your show and there's a break and it goes to a fill in the blank. It goes to a commercial. What are those commercials doing? What are they trying to get you to do? They're trying to get you to listen. And they want you, even at 5 years old, they want to hook you. They want to get you in so that you want
what they're sowing you. Look, to glorify God means that you have to be very distinct and discerning in what you hear and how you hear. To glorify God means you give Him your supreme hearing. He speaks and summons the earth. And where does He speak? Where do you hear Jesus calling? Where do you hear Jesus speaking? You hear Him speaking on every page of the Bible, Genesis to Revelation. He speaks. He speaks, and listening to His voice, new life the dead receive. He speaks. So to glorify Him means you hear. It also means, in order to glorify Him, also means that you are in covenant with Him. So you give Him a distinct hearing, a hearing of allegiance, and you are in covenant with Him. What does He say? Look at verse 5. He says, "Gather to me." Oh, y'all, when the Lord speaks, He does speak to you individually through the Scriptures. Yes, you do seek Him personally and individually. You do enter your prayer closet and you do pour out your petitions before Him as an individual in person. But y'all never overlook this point that in the Bible there is a big deal that is made out of gathered assemblies. When He speaks, what does He want? What is He calling? What is He summoning? Look at verse 5. "Gather to me my faithful ones. Gather them before me, who made a covenant with me by sacrifice." Oh, it's the imagery going back to Exodus 24. It's going back to those days after Mount Sinai, after the giving of the law, after the giving of the Ten Commandments, and they're gathered together, and Moses takes the blood of the covenant and he sprinkles them with the blood. They are in covenant with Him. How? They are in covenant with God through sacrifice. How are you in covenant with God? What is a covenant? A covenant is this bond. It is this sacred bond. It is a relationship which God establishes with us and guarantees by His word. That's what a covenant is. It's this relationship which He forms. He establishes. He takes the initiative. Okay, so it's this relationship which God establishes with us, and then what does He do? He guarantees that bond by His word. You are in covenant with God. Now, how did that come about? How does it come about that you are in covenant with God? Is it because of your own resolutions? There's nothing wrong with resolutions. First week of January, nothing wrong with resolutions. Make them, love them, do them. Nothing wrong with them. If after a few weeks you have to tweak, it's okay. How are you in covenant with God? Look at verse 5. "Gather to me my faithful ones who made a covenant with me by sacrifice." What is the sacrifice that put you in covenant relation with God? Was it not the Lamb of God slain upon the altar? Was it not Christ slain from the foundation of the world? Was it not Christ put to death on Calvary's hill? Is that not the sacrifice that put you in covenant with God? "Not what my hands have done can save my guilty soul. Not what my toiling flesh has borne can bear my awful load. Not what I feel or do can give me peace with God. Not all my prayers and sighs and tears can bear my awful load. It is your work alone, O Christ." That's who put you in covenant with God. And that's who will keep you in covenant with God. It's not just that you're put in covenant by Christ and then you have to do the rest. No, it is that you are in covenant with God through the blood of Christ from start to finish.
He does not start the work and then depend on you to do the rest. No, he places you in that ark and then he shuts the door and he keeps you in. And even your most vigorous efforts of sanctification, where'd that come from? Even your most devoted pursuit of holiness, the spiritual disciplines, the means of grace, where's that come from? It is Christ. Christ, all Christ from start to finish. To glorify him means you give him a hearing, and it means you're in covenant with him. And he will keep you there. He will hold you fast, and he will not let you go. Those waves will beat against the walls, and he will not let you capsize. You are his. In covenant by sacrifice. Third thing I want you to see from this psalm, to glorify him, you give him a hearing, you're in covenant, you worship. That's the third thing I want you to see. You give him worship. The psalmist goes on in verses 8 through 15, and he really lays down the charge that Israel had drifted into a reliance on the external forms. They had slipped into saying, we have the sacrifices, we have the blood, we have the bulls and the goats, therefore we are secure. And here the psalmist challenges their assumption, and he goes after their hearts. Not for your sacrifices, verse 8, do I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. They were being faithful to the ceremonial law. But what does he do here? Here he lays down, what was the purpose of the ceremonial law? The purpose of the ceremonies, the purpose of the bulls and the goats, the purpose of the blood was ever and always to point them to the Lamb of God who would take away the sin of the world. It was always to capture their deepest affections. And always. They were types. They were signs. They were pointing ahead. And so, what does the Lord of the Covenant desire? Look at verses 14 and 15. Offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and perform your vows to the Most High. It's the same sort of thing that Samuel says to Saul. 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel 15, if you know, some of y'all know the story of John Knox, the Scottish reformer in the 16th century. For John Knox, 1 Samuel 15 was extremely important. You know what Samuel says to Saul in 1 Samuel 15? That's where Samuel says to obey is better than sacrifice. You can have all the good intentions in the world, but if it does not come with an obedient heart, it falls dead to the ground. To obey is better than sacrifice. It's an extremely important text just in the history of the Reformation as we think about what worship is. Obedience to the will of God comes first and foremost and stands supreme. Well, we seek his glory. We seek his honor. And how do we do that? We seek his glory by offering worship in spirit and in truth. The fourth thing I want you to see is that to seek his glory, we give him a hearing, we're in covenant with him, we worship with the sacrifice of thanksgiving. And the last thing I want you to see is we frame our life. You frame your life. Look at verse 23. The one who offers thanksgiving as his sacrifice glorifies me, to one who orders his way rightly. orders his way, the one who frames his way. Now you take this beautiful painting, and to set it up on the wall, what do you have to do with it? You frame it. And you hang it up to the one who orders his way rightly. I will show the salvation of God. Now, he gives a scathing indictment. And here, he's not just talking about Israel. Here, he zooms out a bit. And he's not only talking about his people, he's speaking of those outside as well in verses 16 through 22. Verse 16, to the wicked, God says, what right have you to recite my statutes or take my covenant on your lips? You do not get to simply repeat words and phrases and call yourself one of his. Verse 17, you hate discipline. You cast my words behind you. Well, what is he describing here? He's describing a disordered life, disordered affections, disordered thoughts, unframed living. Living without boundaries. If you see a thief, you're pleased with him. You don't know how to say no. You keep company with adulterers. You give your mouth free rein for evil. Unrestrained words that go forth as a fire. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. You know, is this not, line by line, is it not striking at the conscience? Oh, to seek his glory, to live for his honor. You know, that's not just an abstract statement. That takes a concrete form. What is it to, in concrete ways, visible ways, what is it to live for his glory? No, is it not to seek consistency? That there is a consistency between what you say and how you live. Is it not to restrain our mouth? Verse 19. Look at verse 18. Is it not to guard our company? To guard and to be discerning with who pleases us in company. Whose fellowship do you enjoy? Who do you love to spend time with? It's a wonderful question. And why? Who and why? That'll tell you a lot about somebody. Not just a negative way, but a positive way. That'll tell you a lot. You ask somebody who their favorite authors, you're asking who they keep company with. Company, fellowship. What is it to frame your life? It's to guard and be discerning with company. And it is to think rightly about God. That ultimately is what it is. And as we close, I want that to be the thought that rings in your ears. What it is to glorify him is to think rightly about him. For many of us, statements we make about God, they say more about us than they do about God. Look at verse 21. These things you have done, and I've been silent. You thought that I was one like yourself. And because we assume that he is like us, that affects how we think about him. Our definition of who he is. Discussion of his character, his holiness, his worship. That one statement, you thought that I was one like yourself, that drives how we think. It drives how we worship. Drives how we speak. Wherever your life takes you, and whatever decisions are made, Wherever you go, wherever you land, you should never seek to be anything more than what pleases Him, than what glorifies Him, what honors Him. Is that not a life of beauty? Oh, y'all, that's what the Bible sets before you. It sets forth this vision of a life of beauty. And out of Zion, out of His church, the perfection of beauty, God has shined. And what does He shine His light upon? Y'all, He sheds much glory on your way. There is this life of beauty and of order and of glory. There is such a thing as a life framed to the glory of God. There is such a thing as a life of praise. There is such a thing as hearing that is distinct, of hearing that is mixed with faith. There is such a thing as being in covenant with God by sacrifice, of being sprinkled by the blood. There is such a thing as sin pardoned, sin cleansed, sin put to death. There is such a thing as worship that is beautifully offered, that is beautifully sung and read and heard and prayed. And it's here in the Scriptures. Whosoever offers thanksgiving as his sacrifice glorifies me. Supremely to glorify Him means you think rightly and you worship Him with everything that you are and have. We sang earlier this evening, "For the beauty of the earth." How many praises and thanksgivings could you offer Him tonight for the things He has done? He speaks and He summons. Oh, that He would open our ears to hear. That He would keep us with an ear that is bent. He will keep you in covenant with Himself by the blood of His Son. He will hold you fast. He will not let you go. He will instruct and He will train in worship that is offered rightly and purely. And He will frame your life in a manner that honors and glorifies Him. Now, do you trust that? Do you trust those things? Well, here we are gathered before Him, those who are in covenant with Him by sacrifice. And may He give us ears to hear. Won't you pray with me? Our gracious God, we would give You thanks for the covenant of Christ. Lord, that You hold us fast to Yourself, that the blood of the covenant is sprinkled upon our souls, that You give us ears to hear, and that You have made us to be the sons and daughters of Zion, which is the perfection of beauty. We ask that You would train us, Lord, to glorify and to honor You with every step, with every breath, with every decision, with every move, and that You alone would receive the praise. We ask this in Jesus' name.